The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
The second half of the program, we appreciate you joining us. We will get back to your calls in a moment at 855-242-7285. More guests to come. We started the day in Baton Rouge with the latest from Kenny Jacoby of USA Today. Some more allegations have been leveled by a senior athletic department official down there. We also put out a tweet earlier. I hope some of you saw it, and we're going to throw it up on the screen here in a minute. I'll read it to you listeners on radio. Baylor just won their first men's college basketball national championship. Who in college can you see winning their first ever title in the coming seasons? Does Georgia qualify, considering they won one 40 years ago? Maybe they do. Anyway, we'll get to your calls in a moment, and let's do that right now, starting with Jared, who is in Idaho. Hello, Jared. Good afternoon to you. Jared, are you there? I did not hear Jared, so I will try Rick, who is in Tennessee. Rick, thanks. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. Thank you. Good afternoon.
We're heading down I-20. Also, thought we'd call and ask about the Tennessee football. What do you think about the spring practice so far?
It's interesting. We're about to have a guest on that, but what I've heard so far has been very positive. So I think Josh Heupel has his staff that he's comfortable with. I think he likes the quarterback lineup, and we're about to turn the focus on that. What is your thought? What are your feelings?
Well, I feel the same way. Of course, I've watched Heupel since he's at UCF, and I've always said that, you know, watching him play and Scott Frost, I mean, as far as their programs, I mean, they can score some points. And I think Heupel will score some points. It's just we got to get a defense out there that can stop somebody. But I think the excitement's coming back. I mean, I can see the people I talk to. And, I go to every home game. And sometimes I hit a few away games. But I think they're going to be back this year.
Yeah, I think a bowl game is certainly within the realm of possibility. The schedule is not untenable, so I'm optimistic. I'm glad you are. We will talk to Blake in a minute and get the latest from up there, and hopefully it is better news. Let's talk to Don in Georgia next. Good afternoon, Don.
Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
I wanted to give you a comparison and give you a trivia question and see if you can get this, Paul.
Okay.
I was thinking after the Gonzaga-Baylor game last night that 41 years ago, I think it was, there was a team that went 31-1. But the opposites were they lost the first game and won 31 in a row. Gonzaga wins 31 in a row and loses the last one. Both teams in the semifinal game won on a shot from midcourt to win the game. Can you name the other team?
So we're talking 31 years ago, and that would be...
41 years ago.
How many years ago?
1980.
Okay, so I believe Louisville won the championship, didn't they?
Well, I'm going to give you another hint. It was a Division II game.
There oh, okay.
No three-point shot.
Well, no. Well, I would not know the Division II game. I thought you were talking about the Division I.
Well, you would, because I called you on it a few years ago.
Oh, you did?
Texas A&M won that game, that miracle game in the playoffs.
Remember that. Okay. Yeah, go ahead and give it away, because I remember the call, but I don't remember the teams.
Yeah, they played Eastern Missouri. They were 5 points down with 8 seconds to go in the game.
Oh, wow. I do remember that.
Eastern Missouri inbounded the ball. They stole it and shot. Now they're 3 points down with 6 seconds to go. On the inbound, they stole it again, shot it again. Now they're 1 point down with 3 seconds to go and still won the game. They inbounded it, fouled them intentionally, go to the other end. The player missed both shots. Jacksonville State rebounded, threw it to center court. The guy caught it, turned, and threw it. The buzzer went off. The ball went through the basket, and Coach Bill Jones fainted dead away.
Oh, my goodness. I should have known that. 'Cause I saw Bill... what was it, probably 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I was hosting, I was the MC at the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame, and he was inducted that night. And what an amazing evening it was for him and his family.
Listening to your call earlier from a fellow talking about Bo Jackson, the longest home run I ever saw hit, he hit up in Jacksonville, Alabama. He hit it over the center field lights, over the Baptist Student Union building, out onto Highway 21.
Wow. I appreciate your call. And by the way, Don, the next time you call, I am going to know the answer to that one.
Well, I just thought that the dichotomy of the two differences was interesting. So I thought it's.
I never did well in class, Don, which is one reason why I'm a talk show host. But hey, thank you very much for sharing that memory again. Let's continue with more phone calls. And Nathan is up next in Memphis. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing today?
We're doing great, Nathan. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I want to talk about how the Jaden Hill injury affects LSU as a whole this year. I know early on in the season they were bashing home runs like it was nobody's business. Now we've gotten the SEC playing with three of the top five teams in the country in our division. It's pretty hard when your team just isn't getting the job done, you know? Is this the time to put Paul Menary on the hot seat? You know, Paul, I got to make jokes every now and then.
No, you know, I've been following it pretty closely, and it's been rough. And, you know, I tell people all the time that you do not want to get on the wrong side of the LSU baseball crowd.
Hey, look, my uncle's a Mississippi State fan. He calls me corn dog. You know, it's okay. It sucks to get beat by him. Yeah, have a good one, Paul.
I think things are going to get better. Have faith in Coach Menary. Walker is up next in Pennsylvania. Hey, Walker, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. I saw a report where the NCAA, I guess, is going to bid out the baseball regionals this year.
I did see that. Where something I don't know if it was official or not, but they were going to determine them before the playoffs are set. Is that correct?
I was hoping to get some info, more info from you. I don't know. I thought personally that you had to earn your way to a regional, and then the NCAA determined the best site for a regional, and then took in, you know, the teams that made regionals into that.
Hold on, Walter. Danny was telling me that over my Danny, what was that again? Okay. Yeah, Danny, the sites will be determined 3 weeks before the bracket. So I'm sure by then you have a pretty good idea what you're doing. I'm not really sure why they're doing it, but we'll see if we can get some more clarification as we move toward that field. Thank you for the call. Thomas is up next. Hey, Thomas, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul.
Hi there. Good afternoon.
I played football in high school, and I played tennis in college. And I've wondered what you thought about Bear Bryant's grandson playing football at Alabama.
What do I think of his chances, Thomas? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're talking about Paul Tyson here, who is Coach Bryant's grandson's son, so it would be Coach Bryant's great-grandson. And yeah, I think he will challenge Bryce Young, but right now in the spring, Bryce Young is off to a really good start. Leading up to it, I remember we had Stephen M. Smith on a couple of weeks ago, and he actually thought Paul could make a serious run at Bryce, but I'm not sure that's quite developed yet, but it's early, and I appreciate your call very much. We are heading to a break, and we will take your phone calls in a moment. We're potpourri of subjects, so if you got something on your mind, this is the ticket. Give us a ring at 855-242-7285. Much to do before we say goodnight an hour and 45 minutes from now. We'll also head to Knoxville in a few minutes. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And this is the latest mock draft that came out earlier today. Trevor Lawrence, number one, Zach Wilson to the Jets, and Mac Jones. That is the surprise here to San Francisco. He is followed by Kyle Pitts to Atlanta. This is a projection now. Jamar Chase, the great wide receiver from LSU, number five to Cincinnati. Devontae to Miami. That would be pretty cool to have him hook up again with Tua. Jalen Waddle to Detroit. Surtain to Carolina, Trey Lance to Denver, and Jace Horn to Dallas. Mac Jones was 21st in the last draft. Of course, the draft is April 29th and May 1st. We seem to be having a bad row of deaths. We mentioned earlier the passing of Bill Lumpkin, in the longtime Birmingham columnist, and a caller mentioned this to me, but I did not want to go with it until we had confirmation, but it is now being reported by Ben Thomas of AL.com that Shorty White has passed away. He was the legendary Banks High School coach in Birmingham. He once won 35 games in a row. Just think about that. He also served on Coach Bryant's Alabama staff from 1975 to 80, and was there for a couple of national championships in 78 and 79. He was the coach for a number of players and future coaches. The future coach being David Cutcliffe, played for him at Banks, as well as Jeff Rutledge, the longtime quarterback, and Johnny Musso, one of the most famous players in Alabama history. And yeah, he was also involved. Just think about this. His final years at Banks High School, he went 12-0-1 in 72, 13-0 in 73, and 9-2 in 74. And the final season included that legendary game, which has now been immortalized in a movie, when Banks played Woodlawn in front of 42,000 people at Legion Field. Banks won that game 19-6. Remember, Tony Nathan was part of that game as well. It was it's a high school game. I didn't come to Birmingham for about 6 years after that, but I did not go anywhere where I did not hear someone talk about being one of the 42,000. I must have run into 100,000 people who claimed to be in Legion Field that night. Let's get back to the calls at 855-242-7285, and Greg is up next in Tennessee. Hello, Greg. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Paul. How's it going? I have nothing important to talk about today, but I just want to let you know that you have a great show. We watch you all the time, and you're the man.
Well, thank you for saying that. And you know what? We don't really have that much important to talk about today either. We're just kicking back on an early spring afternoon. So that means a lot that you called, and we hope you'll do it again.
Yes, sir. It's a great day.
Thank you very much. Great to hear from you. It's always, this is the time of the year when, you know, the basketball season's over. You know, the Masters is this week. People love spring for a lot of reasons. But you hear people describe days like this where it's pretty much sunny skies and 70 to 80 degrees all over the South as lazy spring days. And there's a reason for that. And that's why we can't wait to get to spring on those cold, rainy winter days. So let's get back to the calls. And Jack, who is up next. Hey, Jack, go right ahead.
Paul,
I've got a question to take you back to what you were talking about, Shorty, in Birmingham. It's
sure.
A Birmingham question. Do you, with the American Conference still one short with UConn leaving, do you see the possibility in a conversation where UAB, with its recent football and basketball success, would be a candidate? And I'll hang up on that.
Yeah, Jack, thank you for the question. And it's a very good question. And we've had the American commissioner on here many, many times, Mike Oresko, and he is certainly a familiar. I think UAB would be an excellent candidate. It has a top-notch basketball program now with Andy Kennedy, and the football program speaks for itself with what Bill Clark is doing. And I've seen some pictures today of the brand new stadium that's about to open. I'll see if I can get some more information on that. But that is a really good question. And there's nothing wrong with the league UAB is in. But if you go back to the heyday of Conference USA with Louisville and Cincinnati, from a basketball standpoint, it's not quite the same as it was. I mean, I think that would be an understatement. Good question. Thank you for the call. Let's check in with Mark, who is up next. Hey, Mark, good afternoon.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
It is well. Thank you.
Hey, great. Hey, just real quick, I had a chance. I was blessed to get to go to Pro Day in Alabama. Got to see Mac Jones up, got to actually see him throw the ball. He's already a great, we already know what he is, but I don't know if this has been reported, but he didn't have a single throw that was not just right on the money, and they put him in some tough spots. I mean, they'll have him roll out, throw against his body, be able to hit the deep ball. And so, when you look at him at number three, is it more about what the teams need? So, for example, he's not number one because whoever's going to take Lawrence needs him? Or how does that, in your opinion, really work?
It's always about need. If you're a particular team and you don't need a quarterback, then you're looking for a defensive player or an offensive lineman or something else. So, there's, by the way, that's my theory. There are a lot of people that theorize that you go for the best player regardless, and then you can adjust. But I would say in Mac Jones's case, Trevor Lawrence, he'll be, let's say he goes three. He's still the third quarterback. So that shows you how critically important quarterbacks are. But, the Jets didn't need a quarterback yesterday. Then today they do. They dumped the guy they took in the top five 3 years ago. So and so have a lot of other teams. It's so hard to get it right. So I would go for the best player myself.
Well, then why don't they go for Devontae Smith? He's the best player on the board.
I remember having that conversation. I had that conversation with somebody a couple of months ago about the day after the championship game, and there was a Jets fan. And I think that's a great question, but not that I'm playing NFL poker, because I don't really follow it as closely as the experts do. Not that they get it right. But I think quarterback trumps anyone, even including the best player available. Thinking, I'm sure I'll be sanctioned for saying this. I've been around a lot of former GMs in my work here, and I frankly don't think these people really know what they're doing. I really don't. And I use Dak Prescott as my primary example, and they overthink it. That it's like playing poker. It's a gut feeling. And they are wrong far more than they're right, it should not be that difficult measuring a player's worth when that's all you do.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a cottage industry now, and you turn on Sports Network in the morning, and that's what you're going to get. And, you know, it'd be one thing if it was right, but, you know, the percentage of getting it right is not very good. Carolina Panthers, after they dumped Cam Newton, they spent a fortune on Teddy Bridgewater, and they're trying to they traded for Sam Darnold yesterday. I mean, that's 1 year. I mean, how difficult is it, I ask, to look at a quarterback and make a determination on whether you think he can play or not? I think you could go to the end of a bar in Boston and do better than some of these GMs. Let's go to Ricky, who was up next in Orlando. Hey, Ricky, good afternoon.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
I am doing great. Thank you for calling.
I actually played for Shorty White.
Did you?
1975 and 76. I was recruited by John David Crow, and Shorty was after Bud Moore, who was also he was a coach there also.
Well, I don't want to do. I mean, I didn't know him that well, but I did know him a little bit. But I'm going to defer to you. Tell all of us what made him so unique.
Well, he was a great motivator, which, you know, as you know, Coach Bryant was, and just a great coach. He coached Jeff Rutledge and Gary Rutledge at Banks, and you know, was the coach against Tony Nathan when
right.
Woodlawn the movie was made. So he was a very inspirational coach. He wasn't a big man in stature, but he'd get after you from time to time when you needed it. And I hate to hear of his passing, and you know, just wanted to tell you what a great person he was and a great leader and a great coach at Alabama.
Ricky, thank you for sharing that. We really appreciate it, and you be well. It's good to hear from you. I knew him a little bit more when he was at Alabama. And, you know, I mean, when you're in a city like that, you definitely run into people all the time. But, you know, I think having that nickname, you know, set him apart. But what an amazing record and what an amazing life that he lived. We will take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. We'll also head to Knoxville here in a minute and talk to our friend Blake Topmeyer right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome you back. Great to have you here. And Blake Topmeyer joins us. I have been introducing him for a few years now as the person who covered the University of Tennessee for the Knoxville News Sentinel, but that has changed. And Blake, thank you for joining us. It seems like congratulations are definitely in order. You are now the SEC columnist for the USA Today Network. How are you doing? And congratulations.
I'm doing well, Paul. Yeah, thanks for that. This will be I'll be staying in Knoxville, not moving, but this will be an opportunity to continue to cover Tennessee, but not only Tennessee, stepping more into a commentary and analysis role for the USA Today Network and opining not just on the Vols, but on schools elsewhere throughout the SEC and enhancing our products throughout the South.
Well, we're really happy because I being a recovering or former sports writer, admire what you have done in a difficult market, which I am slightly familiar with. And this is a fantastic opportunity at a very early age. So let's get to your first piece that you just threw out there. And it's already getting a lot of blowback here on Twitter. We joked about it at the top. We all love spring football, especially since we didn't have it last year. But you have an idea that you think could really shake things up. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm actually borrowing this idea from Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. He threw out there at a press conference last week. He said he would like to see his university ditch the spring game, not do an inter-squad spring game, but instead schedule a spring exhibition against an opponent. And I, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I like it. You know, I mean, one thing we see sometimes in the spring is depth issues come up and teams have a hard time putting 11 on 11 out there and conducting a spring game. But not only that, I think it'd be more compelling too. You want to generate some interest. You want to maybe generate some revenue, put two teams out there and let them play. And I know the concerns that you'd have with that is, what about if players get injured? Well, guess what? They can get injured in a regular spring game too. Actually, they can get injured twice as easily because you have 22 guys on the field instead of 11. And coaches would worry about, what if we lose? Well, it doesn't matter. It's a spring game. It's an exhibition. You know, basketball teams play exhibitions, and if you lose, then who cares? It doesn't hurt you come tournament time. So I like this idea. I think it's a way to kind of provide a new look in the spring and might generate some more interest too.
So just for the sake of argument, and we know it's not happening, and we also know it probably will never happen, what type of games would you propose?
Well, I threw out kind of some parameters. I like keeping things within a four-hour driving distance. I don't know that we need teams crisscrossing the country to be playing in spring exhibitions. But, you know, let's take Oklahoma State, the man with the plan, for example. I got them down to play Arkansas. You know, you got two Power 5 programs there within 4 hours. Let's make that happen. How about Ole Miss and Memphis? These are teams that play sometimes in the regular season, you know, unlike Tennessee and Memphis, Ole Miss and Memphis still play sometimes in the regular season. Two programs.
I believe Memphis beat them the last time they played.
There you go. So, and yeah, that was before Lane Kiffin's arrival. So maybe Ole Miss could kind of flip the scenario there. So, and then I don't think you'd ever get this one to happen, Paul, but I throw it out there. How about Florida and UCF? You know, UCF, they're getting chesty. They want a bigger opportunity against the Power 5 programs. You're telling me that wouldn't be on some televisions in the spring. Gus Malzahn against Dan Mullen, you know, two of the nation's bigger name quarterbacks, and Emory Jones stepping in likely at Florida, and Dylan Gabriel, who led the nation in passing yards per game last year at UCF. I tell you, if they could make that matchup happen in the spring, that would probably be maybe the first time I was really excited to watch a spring football game is you put UCF and Florida on the same field. I think I could enjoy that.
No, you really had some great ideas there, and I think I don't think it will happen, but I would agree with you. We've both been to too many spring games that are usually yawners.
They are, and the thing is, like, you could still do those inter-squad spring scrimmages. You know, I think sometimes, you know, we forget that, like, this isn't the only time teams are scrimmaging throughout the spring. Usually they have a couple scrimmages before they even get to the spring game. And really the spring game is partially a way to kind of put on a show for your fans to generate some excitement for the upcoming season. And so you could still do your inter-squad spring scrimmages behind closed doors, you know, do that in whatever format you need to do it to be able to get through the game with enough depth and enough guys. But then you culminate the spring with this exhibition against another opponent. And I think, you know, maybe I agree with you, Paul. I don't think this is going to happen. Maybe only in me and Mike Gundy's fantasy land are we going to have these spring exhibitions. And it's not often that maybe I would find myself agreeing with something that Mike Gundy threw out there, but I did like this idea. But, you know, if you could make it happen, maybe you could get some teams who wouldn't normally agree to play in a regular season game. Maybe you could at least get them to agree to play in an exhibition where it doesn't count. You know, if you lose the game, you're not really out anything other than maybe being criticized for a week in the local media.
Blake, before you go, let me put you to work on another subject, and I want to get to LSU in a minute. But Tennessee, last time we talked to you, you were pretty upbeat. I know they've had some some more bad news, but we've come to expect that. But what are your thoughts a little bit deeper into spring practice?
Well, I mean, with Tennessee, it's taken an unfortunate turn here, obviously. The suspensions have kind of come in droves. You already had four players suspended for an incident at Stokely Hall dormitory before spring practice started, including the Ballyhooed freshman quarterback, Caden Salter. He's not been on the practice field yet this spring. He's one among the players serving a suspension after that. And now you have Tennessee linebacker Aaron Beasley, who is competing at a position that's already thin on depth, serving an indefinite suspension after an allegation of abuse of an animal. The allegation is, now Beasley has not been arrested or charged at this point, but the allegation is that he caused serious physical injury to the cat of a woman who lives with his girlfriend. And so that has resulted in a suspension. And meanwhile, Tennessee football still has no commitments in its 2022 recruiting class. And I said last time, I don't think that, early April, late March is the time to panic over your recruiting numbers. That being said, it's not promising when you're looking at a goose egg there in your recruiting class either. And Josh Heupel kind of needs to change the narrative, change the headlines right now in his program at a time where he's trying to build positivity, build momentum, build excitement around his tenure. All the dialogue here lately has been about suspended players. So if he's got someone lurking in the background that's ready to commit, I would say that would be a perfect time for it to try to generate some positivity around his program, because it has taken a turn for the worse here in the last week or 10 days.
Blake, before you go, and I know you're not covering the team, but it will be on your new beat. We had Kenny Jacoby on earlier from USA Today, and I don't know if you've had a chance to delve deep into what he wrote, but this is a very disturbing story that keeps percolating down there, and I'm just curious, as someone who has not really been focused on that other than as a passing SEC fan, what your impressions are of where we are right now?
Well, I one thing I think about it, Paul, is there's plenty of blame to go around here, and we're seeing some heads roll at places where people used to work at LSU, but we're not seeing that yet at LSU, and you have to wonder at what point someone's going to be held responsible at LSU for this. And the other thing I would think too, now that Ed Ogeron's name is being included in some of these conversations and this alleged phone call that a 74-year-old grandmother says occurred between her and Ogeron after this grandmother says she was harassed by Darius Geis, and Ogeron says that call never happened, and he says, well, he doesn't have any memory of that. And this is exactly the type of stuff you don't want to have happen after a 5-5 season. You don't want it ever to have happen. But coming on the heels of a 5-5 season, it feels like a long time ago that LSU was celebrating a national championship under Ed Ogeron. And now you have we're in the aftermath of the departure of Joe Burrow, of Joe Brady, and it feels like the heat starting, I think, at least from the outside, from where I sit, starting to pick up a little bit on Ed Ogeron. And I know some people would say, like, well, it was just a couple years ago that he won a national championship. And I would say, well, it was just a couple years after Gene Chizik won a national championship that Auburn was making a coaching change. It's very much a what have you done for me lately business, as you know, Paul. And I'm not suggesting that LSU is going to make any drastic changes there in its coaching staff here in the offseason. But what I am saying is I think Ed Ogeron will enter this season with some ramped up pressure to perform on the football field, because off the field right now, He's being talked about, I think, for all the wrong reasons. And like I said, in a what have you done for me lately business, the perception of a coach can change quickly. We've seen that all too often in the SEC. So that's sort of my take on the situation is when do we get to the point where people currently at LSU are going to be held responsible for any of this wrongdoing?
Yeah, to your point about how things can change quickly, Philip Fulmer and Jeremy Pruitt would second that motion.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, no doubt. After the 2019 season, Jeremy Pruitt getting a contract extension, and I think all of us, myself included, were coming off that 19 season thinking, hey, maybe Tennessee got this right. And within a few months' time, Tennessee was looking for ways to get out of this marriage. And so, you know, so many times it seems improbable that a university could reverse how it feels about someone that they've committed millions of dollars to and years-long contracts to. But we see all the time in the SEC that when you combine on-field failures, especially if you combine them with off-field failures, it doesn't often take long to change the way that people feel about a head coach being the person for that program long term.
Blake Topmeyer, the new SEC reporter and columnist for USA Today Network. You're off to a great start, Blake. Thank you so much for dropping in, and we will talk soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, Paul.
Great stuff. One of the truly outstanding reporters out there covering college football in the SEC. We will take a break. We still have your phone calls around the corner at 855-242-7285.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We welcome you back. Great to have you here, and let's get some more calls. And Ed is up next in Memphis. Hello, Ed.
Hey, Paul. This is my first time to call. I thoroughly enjoy your show.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do is just express a few words of gratitude and pleasure about my Hogs and how well they did in the tournament. Moses Moody didn't play as well as he should have, but that's another story. But I want you to know that Baylor beat Gonzaga by almost twice as many points as they did Arkansas.
No, you're right. I think what was lost is how truly remarkable the job that Eric Musselman did this year and how close they came too.
Right. And just like say, if Baylor's number one, Arkansas is number two.
Well,
go home.
No argument there. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it very, very much. Let's check in with Daryl next from Kentucky. Hey, Daryl.
Hello, Paul. I was going to ask you something, Paul, about the Kentucky basketball team. Would John Calipari have anybody better than what he had this year? I'm going to hang up and let you answer that for me.
Well, I think a lot of things went against him this year. I'm not defending a guy that has a $54 million buyout, but I think this is an aberrational year. It's an outlier to the norm, and I think any serious criticism of John is pretty much ridiculous. Hey, thank you for the call. Paul is up next. Hey, Paul, go right ahead. Paul, you there? Paul in Georgia?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go right ahead. You are on the air.
Yes, what I'm calling about you, the earlier caller, the big top of them were talking about playing a spring game in spring practice. That's going to defeat the entire purpose of spring football practice. Because if you don't prepare for that spring game and you look bad, you're going to lose a lot of
Paul, I disagree. I think what Blake said is really true. I don't think the spring game is as important to the coaches I mean, they paid serious attention to those scrimmages. The spring game is a show. That's to get the fans excited. If for those fans who need exciting, I've stood on the sidelines of those games, and I mean, they may seem like real games, and sometimes they are more competitive than. But a lot of times the fix is in on those games in terms of the coaches have a specific goal in mind, and it may not be what you and I think it is. Anyway, we're up against a break. We have an hour to go. We hope you'll stick around. We are coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.